Welcome to the DDT Archives Indie Lounge. Tonight we are hitting the top shelf. And I say that with the best possible drinks in mind. We're talking Louis the 13th. We're talking $1,000 bottles of wine. With me tonight is the billionaire playboy, America's favorite psychopath, Charles Mason. What's going on, my man?
Everything is good, and the pleasure is all yours for the fact that I am on this show tonight. I am blessing you. I am blessing your podcast. I am blessing your listeners. And I want to go back to something you said. You called me the billionaire playboy. I am no longer referring to myself as such. I am the root of all evil, Charles Mason.
I stand here apologizing. Last thing I wanted to do was start out on this way. You are by far the root of all evil. And let's start right there. Over the last few months, we have watched you embrace this darker side of you. Talk about how you've come to accept that side of you and what fans can expect to see moving forward.
You know, it's easy to trace it back to a particular moment, an instant in time in which I discovered more about who I am truly, when I embraced who I really am deep inside. I've always had this hatred, this disdain for the poor, for people like you. I always thought it would be frowned upon if I acted upon these desires that I had deep inside. But it was in August, I believe, when I faced that piece of garbage, that bum, that Ellis Taylor, for the first time in a number one contenders match. And I locked in a guillotine. And when I saw the light leave his eyes, when I felt the air struggle to get back into his lungs, that's when I knew. That's when I felt that. I felt it deep down that what I was doing was right. That was right for me. That I can act on these desires. And that's what you're going to see in the future. That's what you're going to see in about 9 days when I face Ellis Taylor in a knockout or submission match. I've knocked him out before. I've submitted him before. I'm going to do it again. And it's going to be just as euphoric. It's going to be just as pleasurable. I'm going to love every single second of it.
It was very, very clear watching that match that switch you talked about, we saw it as fans in the audience. And it clearly makes you the most dangerous man on the roster at Synergy Pro Wrestling. And that's no... coming from me, that's no disrespect to anybody else on the roster, but there is something different about that look in your eye than what we see in people like KTB or Brandon Kirk, who are dangerous men, but you, I'll say it, homicidal thoughts seem to be crossing through your mind, and especially in the promos that you've been putting out on YouTube, which... fantastic, I might add, which I don't know what it says about me, but they are incredible. So kind of talk about that.
You know, I figured you would enjoy it, amongst other people would enjoy these vignettes that I've been putting out. A lot of us, including myself, for a while, we wear masks. And we wear a mask to hide who we are deep inside. You may have these desires as well. Maybe not towards the poor like I do, but for something else. And maybe that hit home for you. I am the most dangerous man on the Synergy roster by far. I believe I'm the most dangerous man. I want to be the best wrestler. I don't want to be the best technical wrestler in the world. I am the most dangerous. And because I'm the most dangerous, I'm going to be the most successful. These promos, these vignettes, so let's get back to that, have been kind of letting people into my psyche and kind of letting you know what I'm feeling on a day-to-day basis. These homicidal thoughts, that's what I think about every waking moment of my life.
Do you trace these thoughts back to when you were a child, or is this like a new revelation?
These thoughts have always been there, I believe. When I was a child, me and my father would ride into the city, driven by a personal driver, and I would see homeless people on the side of the road, and I would be disgusted. I would be close to vomiting. And my father would have to shield my eyes from what I saw when I would come into places like New York City and Los Angeles. I would see the homeless. I would see people struggling, begging for change. And I had nothing but disdain for them. I was disgusted. There was no type of empathy for those people who were quite clearly lower than me. And since a child, I've always known that I was superior, that I was better. And if anything, all I wanted to do was control them the same way I would control my servants and my house workers and people that would take care of me when my father was on business trips. I knew that those people worked for me. I would be 6 years old knowing that grown men and women were working for me. The only thing was that I felt that I couldn't express these deep, dark feelings that I had, for people would judge me upon them. You know, it's not quite, I'm not, you know, a model citizen when I act upon these things. But now that I'm in the wrestling world, there's no excuse. There's no reason to hide this anymore. These matches are sanctioned. You decide to get in the ring with me, and this, I'm going to let it all out. And I don't care who I hurt. Quite frankly, I find pleasure in it. You've seen my face. You've seen the first time I choked out Ellis Taylor. It was orgasmic. It was intoxicating. It was euphoric. I likened it to literally an orgasm. That's how it felt.
Something you said really, really jumped out there at me. And take this as kind of it's a compliment. As a six-year-old, like, I picture it like a Richie Rich kind of lifestyle. Like have everything. Only, instead of, like, wanting cartoons and shit, you were, like, tying it into some Patrick Bateman American Psycho shit. Is this, like, where it was going for you?
I was born with a golden spoon in my mouth. You know, you poor common folk throw silver spoon around. I was born with a golden spoon with fine china in front of me, eating delicacies. And sure, most children grow up with cartoons and toys. I could have anything I wanted. And what I wanted at the time was frowned upon, like I said. The more I grew, the more I acted out. It started off, I'll be honest, with house pets. We had so many that when one or two would go missing, no one would really notice. Then it started moving on to my house staff. And I would do things to my cooks and my butlers, but they would stay quiet, fearing for losing their jobs. And as I grew older, I would watch more films, and I can understand how you can compare me to someone like Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. And, you know, there's something there, I guess, that you can, I can see where you're getting that comparison. Those thoughts that he has, I have. But on a more, I would say on a times 10. You know, at the end of that movie, people still don't know if that's real or not. People don't know if he truly acted upon his thoughts. It's that grand mystery that we're left with. It's been about 30 years and people are still wondering. There is no guessing if I'm going to act out on my thoughts. I do it. I do it in front of all of you. And I'll do it to you.
I would say I'd look forward to it, but that would kind of make me a creep. So obviously you've made it very clear. You have nothing but disdain for common folk. And I mean, I'd like to think I'm a little above a common folk living in my $1 million house, but it doesn't touch yours. I respect that. But I'd like to think I'm a banner.
You're probably still making payments. We're not the same. We're not even close.
I'm not saying we're close. I'm just saying I'm not a commoner. I work too hard to be a commoner. My co-host is a commoner.
Well, you work. You still need to have a job to maintain your lifestyle. I haven't worked my entire life.
Correct. Fair. Got your point. So is there a part of you that has a feeling when acting out, you're almost like an angel of mercy? Or is it purely for your pleasure only?
This is purely selfish. It's for my pleasure. I get off on this. There are people, you know, there are certain wrestlers actually who I've heard that this is how they get off. They being in front of a crowd does it for them. Being able to show their ability does it for them. For me, it's feeling the life being sucked out of my opponent is what gets me off. I've done years of playing polo, of rounds of golf. I can do anything I want, and it doesn't do it for me anymore. But this does. This is how I get off. So it's purely for pleasure.
Where does the cruiserweight crowd fit in all of this? Because obviously you were having a war with TJ, and then obviously your conflict with Ellis turned its ugly head again. But is your ultimate goal in Synergy to wear that crown, or does that really not matter to you?
It doesn't matter at all. The crown was something that would have come along with beating TJ Crawford. Because TJ Crawford is another poor man who saved up as much money as he could to escape the city of Chicago and come here with maybe $100 in his pocket, maybe probably less, to train, to live out his dream. When I beat Ellis, I became number one contender. But that was just me beating another poor man. When I was in the ring with TJ Crawford, I felt his life slip away. He submitted before I can fully feel the light leave his eyes. And then Ellis Taylor decided he needed to get some revenge. He couldn't be embarrassed. He couldn't live with that. He couldn't live with what I did to him at the previous show. And I would have won that crown. It would have been on a mantle somewhere in my home. I wouldn't have paid it any mind. I would have defended it when I needed to, because it would have been against another poor man from Synergy. But that's just what comes with me living out my fantasies.
With you being the top of the top financially, does it at times put you in conflict with the owner of Synergy?
I think that's a funny thing, because after Ellis interfered in that show, after that match with TJ Crawford, and TJ put his arm over me and I lost, there was no way I was leaving without my fix. I was going to take it out on that moronic referee. And then I felt someone grab me from behind. I didn't care who it was. And I choked him out. And as I was doing so, Colin West, the owner of Synergy, the only thing that man can own, I'm sure he got it for cheap because it was nothing before. Synergy was a terrible company a few years ago. And he's done a great job of building it. But he thought that he had some type of leverage against me by coming in saying he would fire me. Do you think I need his money? Do you think I care if I'm fired? I will go somewhere else. There are poor people across the nation, across the world. So for him to try to hold a job over me, that was senseless. It was moronic. He's an idiot. So if there's any type of conflict there, maybe he holds something against me. Maybe he's upset that he can't control me.
You made mention of your father from when you were a child. How does your family feel about you embracing these urges?
I'll be quite honest. I don't believe they're aware that I'm doing this. And if they were, if they somehow found out, I would hope that they would be proud of me. That I am taking out the trash. That is you poor people. You know, I was born into money, and money has transformed me into who I am today. Money is the root of all evil. Therefore, I am too. Now, if they found out that I was doing this, as I said, they would embrace it. Maybe they would join me. Who knows? But I'm sure that they would be proud of me. My father would be proud of his son.
Where do you go after you turn Ellis's lights out? Where's your next move?
That roster, the Synergy roster, is just full of potential victims. Guys like LSG. Guys like KTB. Maybe the guy that Ellis Taylor himself looks up to, who's always following behind, can never fill his shoes. Maybe someone like Jordan Oliver. Or maybe that white trash champion of Synergy, I believe, is Brandon Kirk. I've already been in the ring with his wife. I felt her flesh against mine. Take that however you want. But maybe I finish the job and I go after her husband. She won on a fluke. I was in there with her and Sweet Cheeks Joey Silver. But put me in the ring with Brandon Kirk. I'll take that title. And I'll take his life.
Outside of Synergy, what are your ultimate goals? Because obviously you're not motivated by money. You have it all. Like, what is it? Fame you're chasing, or is it just you want to continue to take out the trash?
Yeah, I don't need money, so I'm not looking for a contract. A lot of wrestlers are doing their best every week so that they can get noticed by someone higher up and get a contract. I am not craving that, and that is from the heart. I am not looking for a contract. I am not looking for championships necessarily. I am definitely not looking for fame. What I am looking to do is to continue to find pleasure in hurting the poor. I've done so in a few states. I want to take this around the nation, and after this virus falls back a little bit, I want to go to places like Japan. I want to go to Mexico. I want to go to the UK. I want to travel the world. I want my legacy around the globe to be that I was the most dangerous man in combat sports. That every time you got into the ring with me, your life was in danger. And I don't want that to be in only the United States. I need kids around the world to fear me. I need my legacy to go down generation to generation. So people understand that I was the most dangerous man in the world.
I want to take you back to the first time I we didn't actually meet at while you were coming to the ring, but you cursed out a small child that was sitting behind me. And part of me chuckled. I laughed. I thought it was awesome. Not going to lie to you. I'm just, there's part of me that is a fucked up individual. And I did take pleasure in that. But I've also noticed that side of you hasn't been anywhere in sight lately. Have you kind of turned a blind eye to the fans of Synergy at this point and have just totally put that bullseye on your opponent?
You know, for a long time, I used to give a lot of attention to the fans. And this wasn't positive attention. It was all negative. I would insult them. As you said, I cursed out a small child. I told a child that he should give up because he'll never grow up to amount to anything. Now, some people will say that's crossing the line. There's a handicapped girl that comes to the shows regularly. I got down on one knee and put my middle finger in her face. But as you said, lately, my attention has been on my opponents, especially with this virus going around. I'm not going to interact with fans who can potentially give me a life-threatening disease because they most likely have it, because they cannot follow simple directions. It's hard for poor, stupid people to follow rules. So I do not want to interact with those human scum.
How difficult was it for you in school to deal with people that weren't on your level?
So, someone like you would ask a simple question like that, and you will assume that I went to school just like you, because you're used to being in conversation with people who are your equals. I was homeschooled. I hired a teacher. I hired several teachers to teach me things. I am fluent in multiple languages because I hired the best. I would never go to school and take any chance with being around people like you.
Well, if that's the case, how did you become such a great athlete?
I have the best trainers in the world. I have the best personal trainers in the world right now. I have top chefs at my disposal to make sure that my nutrition is the best there is. Growing up, I would fly in NBA players to help me with basketball lessons. I would fly in baseball players, football players, swimmers. I've had Michael Phelps at my home. All right. When I have the money, I can pay them whatever they need to come over and give me private lessons. Something that you wish could probably happen.
Just trying to figure out what other private lessons Michael Phelps gave you.
I won't say too much on that, but it's a cool guy, I guess.
Let's talk about these urges. And you told us the end result, this orgasmic feeling. But as the urges hit you, what is that feeling like?
As the urges...
As they take you, what is that like?
As I embrace them, as I embrace these urges and they take over me, I can only, like I said before, I can only compare it. And some people don't like to hear this, but it's almost sexual. I don't want to say that I'm out there getting, I'll be very straightforward. I'm not out there getting erect in the moment, but the feeling, my blood starts pumping. I feel it in my heart. My eyes roll back. I bite my lip as I'm clutching at this person's throat. It's literally orgasmic. It is euphoric. It takes me somewhere that I cannot take myself without it. It's almost like I'm on some type of drug. And there's no way I want to get off of that. It's a high that I never want to come down from.
Now, does this hit you every minute of every day walking down a city street? Or are there like specific targets that kind of come into your periphery and you're like, boom, that I need to get my hands around that person's throat?
It's very complicated. I wake up and I don't immediately feel it. As my day goes, I start seeing things on the internet. I start thinking about someone I saw the previous day, and I start going through what some people would, I guess, compare to like anxiety. I start feeling like an anxiety kind of panic attack start to come in, and I get this need, this craving, this urge to fulfill my needs. And seeing, I have a bunch of triggers, like I said, homeless people, just anyone really who has never lived the lifestyle that I have, who doesn't have the money that I have, it only enhances that feeling. And it's really hard to go through a day and not be able to act upon it. But at least once a day, I make sure that I inflict some pain on someone.
So I want to go back to that the Patrick Bateman reference. So when he tortured people, like the women that he tortured, he paid them. When you find these random poor souls, and I'm not talking Ellis here, I'm talking the people in your vignettes, are you walking away dropping a wad of cash and just telling them to go fuck off?
No. When I first started, that's how it would happen. When I first started, I saw this one homeless woman. And she had a sign saying that she had a couple of children and she needs to feed her kids. And people were dropping dimes and nickels in her little bucket because I guess they felt a little bit of empathy for her. And I went up to this woman and I offered her $100 to follow me into my limousine. She followed me and I beat her brains out and threw her out of my car. And she was able to keep the $100. And that's how it started. But then I realized that I can do this and not waste any of my money, not exchange my funds with the poor, and keep it all to myself while still inflicting this pain, still getting my rocks off. So no. Now the money is all mine. And I'm not sharing this with any one of you pieces of garbage.
Are the urges getting worse?
Recently, yes.
Does it scare you for how bad they could potentially get?
It's kind of bittersweet in a way in which they don't scare me, but I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to control myself as much as I have. I've let a lot of it out, a lot of these urges out. But on Black Friday, when I faced Ellis Taylor, that man has formed more than just another victim of mine. We've formed a sort of a feud. And, when he interrupted my choking of TJ Crawford, it's kind of like giving me blue balls, you know? He came and interrupted something that I was doing, came in my business. So after he lost to Casey, I smashed his knee in after tying his neck to the rope with my tie. And then I was escorted out the building. But if they never stopped me, I don't know how far I would have gotten. And now that he was foolish enough to pick the stipulation of knockout or submission, I don't believe there's any rules in this match. There's no one to protect him. He's either going to have to tap out or he's going to be in the ring with me until he loses consciousness. And even if he taps out, I don't know if I'm going to stop. So it's not so much that I'm scared. It's, am I ready to embrace this next evolution of myself? Am I ready for that? I think I am.
And there's no part of you that has any, like, just listening to you, you have no concern for what Ellis can do. No. And, you know, I liken it to you injured a junkyard dog. Like, he is the prototypical junkyard dog that is ready to attack. And you wounded him. So wouldn't that, in theory, make him that much more dangerous to you?
I don't think so. Not at all. He's white trailer trash. When I first faced him, he was healthy. He had come off of months of relaxation, and I was able to conquer him. Now, I'm aware of a knee injury that this man has. That this animal has. How dare I call him a man? That is an animal. Most of you are animals. And I'm going to conquer him again. I'm going to feel the ligaments tear from his knee. And then I'm going to choke him out as I did before and squeeze that carotid artery until blood doesn't rush to the brain anymore, until air can't get back into his lungs. Maybe he's dangerous to his peers, to his equals. To me, not so much.
Do you intend to leave him to be carried out in a body bag? Because that's what it sounds like you're ready to do.
Honestly, yeah. Like I said, this evolution, this place that I'm going, I'm not sure what I'm capable of. I don't know if I can, you know, I've never had any remorse before. And I'm not going to have it now. But when I go into this trance, I don't anticipate myself controlling myself. I don't see me stopping. So if it means that he's out in a body bag, so be it. No one's going to attend that man's funeral. No one's going to miss him when he's gone. You fans barely like this man. You only like him when I'm in the ring with him. Because you love him because you hate me. And you want to see him hurt me. But that's not going to happen. I'm going to beat that man within an inch of his life. But the truth is, there's a chance I go further. And he never takes another breath again.
Let's be real for a minute. You know I'm a fan of yours. How does that make you feel?
I don't blame you. You should be a fan of mine. Although that my intentions when I wrestle are not to be a champion, to not to get a contract or any of the things that most wrestlers go for, I'm the most talented man in that ring. I'm extremely athletic. I'm a technical wizard. I hit harder than most. And people like you like that. You think that I'm another, wow, this is a such a good wrestler. Almost, he's great. He's phenomenal. So why wouldn't you like me? Of course. But I don't care. I'm not here for fans. I'm not here for you to buy my shirt. The only reason why I want people to purchase my merchandise is so that I can spend poor man's money on items to hurt other poor men with. It's kind of like feeding burgers to a cow. You know how sick that is? They're pretty much eating themselves. So you know, I take a poor man's money and buy a steel chair to hit Ellis in the face with. That's just comical to me.
You just brought up a really great scenario for me. And you're going to think it's weird as fuck, because it is. But this is legit. I one time saw a seagull eating a chicken breast. Was that cannibalism?
That would be, right? But they are... The seagull in that moment is kind of ignorant to the fact that it's eating another bird.
Yes, I agree. But, like, I watched it and I was fascinated. And I only bring it up because you used the metaphor of, you know, feeding a hamburger to the cow, and this was a real life situation.
I understand why you brought it up. It's not rocket science. I understand it's easy. I know you're used to talking to stupid people, but I kind of caught on pretty quickly. It's animals. And beasts, they're not aware of what they're doing. They just need to eat. They're just going, they're tunnel vision. They need to eat, procreate, and that's all they do. And that's how I look at poor people like you, people like Ellis Taylor, people like the people on the Synergy roster. They're just going in, they're wrestling, they're going home, they're sleeping, they're eating, come back and they wrestle. But they don't have anything to strive for as far as personal pleasure. You are an animal. To me, I am a step above you in the food chain. You know, there's this theory amongst people like myself in the top 1% that it would kind of make sense if some of you poor people, instead of having tons of children, you know, you have your child and you offer them to us. And we do what we want with, you know, maybe we eat them. Maybe we have them work for us.
Did you just say you're going to eat a child?
Hey, it came down to it. You might as well make yourselves useful, right? We eat cows, we eat chickens, we eat goat, lamb.
And now you're getting, now we're bringing Hannibal Lecter into this shit.
Listen, why is it that it's okay for us to eat other animals? And not, if I consider you an animal, if I consider you below me, why wouldn't I eat you too? Because there's laws against it for now. But when people like me control the world and we get our way, if there was ever you know, some type of famine or something, and we needed to eat, you'd probably be first up.
So then by that logic, wouldn't you have to kind of marry your sister because she'd be the only one equal to you?
My sister? No. Top 1%.
You know, but you're above the top 1%. Let's call it like it is. At your level, there aren't many, so wouldn't you, while you're going to sit there and eat the poor's baby, are we talking that you're going to have to date your own sister?
I don't think I would date my own sister.
No, like, that's what the kings did back in the day.
And we have children. My children would come out probably with some type of form of mental retardation like you, and I will risk that. I wouldn't a deformity in my superior gene line.
I mean, you're not the first person to say that I have some kind of defect, but yeah, you know,
it's quite clear.
I mean, probably. Now, with that, while you're a 1%er, we'll give you an opportunity now, as we start coming to a close. How can the peasants, the peons, the average, the poor, the people you hate, follow you? Where can they find you on social media? What can they expect to see?
They can follow me on Twitter at _CharlesMason. Very simple. I'm going to say it again because a lot of stupid listeners are going to have a hard time remembering that. It's on Twitter, _CharlesMason. I do not have an Instagram. My Instagram was hacked and deleted 3 times in 2 weeks. True story. I'm sure that there are some angry people out there that haven't liked what I've had to say to them. As you said, I used to be get really personal with fans. And who knows who it could have been, but I do not have Instagram. So Twitter is really the only place to reach me. I have a Facebook, but I'm not very active there because the people on Facebook are extremely weird. You think I'm weird? Those people are weird. If you want to see these vignettes that we've been talking about, you can have your listeners go on YouTube and look up Charles Mason and go on my page and you can see my promos. What you can expect to see on social media, you'll see me hurting the poor, me hurting the peasants. Every now and then you'll see a picture of me showing off my physique. Make sure that your wives don't go on my page because you'll never have them again. And that's really it. It's really clear cut. I try not to get too political every now and then I do, but most of the time you're going to see me beating the shit out of peasants that live in poverty.
Well, I truly appreciate your time. It has been an enlightening and horrifying experience. I may have to call a psychologist after this.
I wish I can say that I had a good time on here too, but your company has not been as great as I anticipated. I will say that it was horrifying, just like your time with me was horrifying, maybe for different reasons. A lot of people are listening to this, but I've had to suffer through looking at your bald, fat face this entire interview, and I've almost vomited 3 times.
Well, I guess that's better than the last time, because when I saw you at the show, you puked on my shoes. You can follow the show at DDT Archives on both Twitter and Instagram. You can follow me at CAPO_DDT. We're going to keep bringing you the best performers on the independent scene, even if they are truly the root of all of it.